All right. Well, we're continuing on in our series of questions that I received, and this one it may seem a bit out of season, but hopefully it's actually right in season. So if you're a gardener, you've probably already started to think about next year's garden. And so this one pertains to gardening and the land Sabbaths. So the question was, for a garden, does the land Sabbath apply? How do you determine when to start the land Sabbath? Should it tie into the third tithe years if one decides to practice third tithe? So I thought that was an interesting question, and it's probably one that came from a gardener, I'm guessing. But yeah, it's an interesting question. So we're going to go ahead and jump in here. There's two primary scriptures in which this is covered. It's in Exodus and Leviticus, and we'll start in Exodus 23. Exodus 23, starting in verse 10. Says, 6 years you shall sow your land and gather in its produce, but the seventh year you shall let it rest and lie fallow, that the poor of your people may eat, and what they leave the beast of the field may eat. In like manner you shall do with your vineyard and your olive grove. So, you know, talks about your field that they would plant. Of course, by and large, the agrarian society, they were basically, you know, growing dinner on a weekly and daily basis. And it says, you know, it applies to not just the barley and the wheat and the corn, but, you know, all of their crops, you know, basically. So every seventh year, they would let the ground go fallow. Fallow, by the way, typically means that you would actually till the ground up, but you wouldn't plant it, which is different than not doing anything. And what that shows is kind of is that it's talking about ground that is dedicated for the use of farming. It also gives us a reason here of why we do it, and that is to help feed the poor. And you might ask the question, well, how does not growing food help feed anybody, let alone the poor? So for some clarification on that, let's go over to Leviticus, where we read the other command on this. Leviticus 25. Starting verse 1, it says, And the Lord spoke to Moses on Mount Sinai, saying, Speak to the children of Israel, and say to them, When you come to the land which I give you, then the land shall keep a Sabbath to the Lord. 6 years you shall sow your field, and 6 years you shall prune your vineyard, and gather its fruit. But in the seventh year shall be a Sabbath of solemn rest for the land, a Sabbath of the Lord. You shall neither sow your field nor prune your vineyard. So what we see then is basically, you know, that kind of that instruction repeated just a little bit more. So it says, you know, you want to work it 6 years and give it a rest in the seventh year. Verse 5, continuing on. It says, What grows of its own accord of your harvest you shall not reap, nor gather the grapes for your of your untended vine, for it is a year of rest for the land. So it says, you know, don't go and harvest anything that happens to come up. But that's maybe not the complete meaning, because if you keep reading, it says, And the Sabbath produce of the land shall be food for you, your male and your female servants, your hired man and the stranger who dwells with you, for your livestock and beasts that are in your land, all its food, all its produce shall be for food. So I have to admit, this seemed like a little bit of a contradictory scripture when I first read through it. I thought, well, wait a minute. Verse 5 says, you know, you don't do anything. And then verse 6, it says, it is produce for you. So I did a little bit of research on this. I actually did quite a bit of research on it. And like most things, there are a wide variety of opinions out there. We don't have any real, we don't have a study paper on this particular subject or anything within United. We do have a study paper on Sabbath observance, and it kind of touches on the land Sabbath, but doesn't really go into details. So I think what we see is there's a little bit of a difference between what's said in verse 5 and what's said in verse 6. Verse 5, it says, What grows of its own accord of your harvest? And I think that's where we start to see a little bit of differentiation. Of your harvest, so that indicates maybe something that you actually did. Verse 6, though, it talks about, you know, basically things that would just come up naturally of their own accord, not anything to do with human intervention, what we call a volunteer. So, you know, we have volunteers that show up in our garden every, you know, every year I've ever had a garden, there's always been a volunteer. You know, I till it up and plant carrots, and lo and behold, in the middle of my carrots, you know, I have a stray green bean that pops up. Or out of my scrap pile out in the woods, I go out there, and lo and behold, a cucumber, you know, is growing out there in the woods from where we toss cucumbers. So I think we get to see a little bit of a difference. Verse 5, it talks about being your harvest. In other words, something that you put a little work into. So how could this be, and how does it relate to feeding the poor? So I guess a couple of ways we could actually look at this as far as the difference between what's said in verse 5, which you know, seemingly tells you you can't eat anything that comes up during the Sabbath year, and verse 6 and 7, which tells you you can. The first differentiation could possibly be it's kind of a reminder not to plan anything. You know, if you decide, if you forget it's the seventh year and you go ahead and plant, and then, you know, when it starts to grow, you say, oh, wait, this is the land Sabbath, I shouldn't be harvesting it. Or if, you know, maybe you stumbled a little bit in your faith and you decide, well, you know, it's been kind of a lean year, I'm going to go ahead and plant anyway. You would have some time between the time you planted the land and the time it came up that you could say, yeah, probably not a good idea. So this might be a little bit of a reminder. The other scenario, one that I think is a little more likely, is that what if I try to be a little bit sneaky, and so in year 6, I don't harvest everything. So, you know, the land Sabbath is supposed to be every 7 years. You know, you plant, harvest in year 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, and you take year 7 off. What if I decide to be a little bit sneaky and say, well, I'm going to plant, you know, twice as much grain in year 6, and then I'm only going to harvest half of it and leave the other half planted and hope it makes it through the winter. And then in year 7, I'll harvest, you know, some of that. So I didn't plant it in year 7, but I'm just basically getting leftovers. I think, you know, if you read this verse, you understand that God, verse 5, where it says of your harvest, kind of makes a delineation. You know, you can't just, use leftovers from years 5 or year 6 and say, well, I technically didn't do that. A good piece of advice is don't try to weasel around God's law. It's just not to do it. Don't do it. You know, I've heard of people doing different things, or like they would have maybe 7 fields, and they would leave one unplanted every year. And so every year they were in a cycle, and so they had one field that wasn't planted. So they were always practicing a land Sabbath. And while that might meet the letter of the law, technically speaking, for the field, what about the guy for harvesting it, you know? So people would try to kind of weasel around things like that, wouldn't exactly meet, you know, the intent of the law. So it seems like maybe there's a little bit of a distinction here to kind of show that. A third possibility is that if you have, in verse 6, if you have a New King James Bible, you might notice that the word produce is italicized. And you know what that means, right? It means that word was not originally there in the original text. So verse 6 would read instead, and the Sabbath of the land shall be food for you, or the Sabbath of the land will provide food for you. So the third possibility is that God is pointing out here, listen, if you obey my laws, if you give the land a Sabbath rest in the seventh year, then the previous 6 years are going to provide enough for you. So there's a couple of few different ways to interpret that. In any case, any way you interpret it, you know, God is making it clear, you know, you really need to follow the letter of the law. That's what he was telling, you know, ancient Israel. I said, don't try to weasel around it. You know, this is something that I'm serious about. So that's kind of the basics there on how a land Sabbath would work. Before we get into actually the question that was asked, which is, do we today as gardeners need to practice a land Sabbath? Does anybody have any questions about how the land Sabbath itself would have worked? I will try to answer them as best I can. May or may not be able to. Some of you have muted because of background noise, so if you try to talk and I'm not responding, wave your hands at me. I know to listen. So, yeah, there's, we'll actually touch on that here in just a second. There's, I would say likely that they were, you know, because they were all on the same cycle, which is one of the specific questions that was asked was, if we practice it today, how will we do it? And then that gets into a little bit of a sticky wicket as far as when we would do it. But more than likely, yeah, I would say it started, you know, basically on Sinai there, and the whole land would have been on it at one time. To the best of my knowledge, I could be wrong about that. So if any, there's any research that shows otherwise, I'm not aware of it. Another thing that's closely connected to the land Sabbath is the year of Jubilee. If we continue reading here in Leviticus 25, and we'll go on into verse 8, it says, "And you shall count 7 Sabbaths of years for yourselves, 7 times 7 years, and the time of 7 Sabbaths of years shall be to you 49 years." So, you know, that's just straight up math there. 7 times 7 is 49. Says, "Then you shall cause the trumpet of the Jubilee to sound on the 10th day of the 7th month. On the Day of Atonement you shall make a trumpet to sound throughout all your land. And you shall consecrate the 50th year and proclaim liberty throughout all the land, all its inhabitants. It shall be a Jubilee for you, and each of you shall return to his possession, and each of you shall return to his family. That 50th year shall be a Jubilee to you. In it you shall neither sow nor reap what grows of its own accord, neither gather the grapes of your unintended wine, for it is a Jubilee, it shall be holy to you, you shall eat its produce from the field." So again, we see what kind of seems like a bit of a contradiction here, as saying in the Jubilee year, and so in the Jubilee year, that would be the 50th year, which comes after the 49th year, which is end of a 7-year cycle, so you actually have then two, basically, land Sabbaths in a row, the 49th and the 50th year, but it says that 50th year shall be a Jubilee to you. You shall neither sow nor reap what grows of its own accord, nor gather the grapes of your unintended vine. For it is a Jubilee, it shall be holy. You shall eat of its produce from the field. So again, it kind of sounds contradictory. But again, I think we can look at the same sort of three explanations. And other three explanations, I think perhaps the most likely, the intended one, is that that God would provide extra through the land Sabbath to make up for that time. So you're eating of the fruit of the land, but it's not from the fruit of the land of that year. And in fact, if we continue to read, we see an explanation given here. It's in starts in verse 18. Let's see. Verse 18 here in Leviticus 25, it says, "So you shall observe my statutes and keep my judgments and perform them, and you will dwell in the land in safety. Then the land will yield its fruit, and you will eat your fill and dwell there in safety." So this is kind of a general sort of a guideline that God pronounces, or a general blessing that he pronounces. Says, you know, if you follow my laws, the land will produce the food that you need. Verse 20, it says, "And if you say, what shall we eat in the 7th year, since we shall not sow nor gather in our produce? Then I will command my blessing on you in the 6th year, and it will bring forth produce enough for 3 years. And you shall sow in the 8th year and eat old produce until the 9th year, until its produce comes in, you shall eat of the old harvest." So here we see a pretty good explanation given that really leads credence to the third of those possibilities we mentioned earlier, and that is that God would produce more food. So basically you would have a bumper crop in year 6. You would take year 7 off. Year 8, you plant at the beginning of the year, but you're not going to start sowing or reaping anything until the end of year 8. So you're basically having to go, you know, 2 years or a year and a half without harvesting. And God says, I'll give you enough to get you through year seven, through year eight and a half, and into year nine. So I really think the meaning there is that when it says, you know, don't harvest and yet you shall eat of the harvest, it's referring to the abundant harvest that God will give in year six as an extra blessing for you to have what you need to eat. I don't know if that makes sense or if it raises more questions or anything like that. Well, one other verse we kind of skipped over, and I skipped over it intentionally, and it's right here in the middle of Leviticus 25, is verse 17. Kind of gives us the underlying principle of why God wants to do this. Well, actually, let's back up to verse 13. So this is specifically talking about the Jubilee year. It says, in this year of Jubilee, each of you shall return to his possession. And if you sell anything to your neighbor or buy from your neighbor's hand, you shall not oppress one another. According to the number of years after the Jubilee, you shall buy from your neighbor, and according to the number of years of crops, he shall sell to you. So it's kind of a prorated system. So to speak, it says, according to the multitude of years, you shall increase its price, and according to the fewer number of years, you shall diminish its price, for he sells to you according to the number of the years of the crops. So, you know, if the returning of the land, that only happened every 50th year, not, you know, in the every seventh year. And so if you had a piece of land that was worth $100,000, and, you know, you were basically getting paid for it over time, and you sold it in year 49, you didn't have to repay all $100,000. You just had to repay basically the portion you received for the selling of your land. Again, they wouldn't have worked so much on a cash system like we think of in terms of modern, you know, paying money for land. It would have been more of the value of the crops. But basically, he says, you know, it's to be proportional or prorated. In verse 17, we get a principle. It says, therefore, you shall not oppress one another, but you shall fear your God, for I am the Lord your God. So this kind of ties in together with why this is all done. The Jubilee specifically was designed so that people wouldn't oppress one another, that you didn't have, you know, kind of the rich getting richer, somebody buying up all the land and basically becoming a land baron, and people losing their inheritance because they had fallen on a few hard years. You know, and it also shows not to take advantage of those who are poor, which ties into the third tithe question that was asked. You know, the kind of the general question was, does this tie into the third tithe? And it does in a manner, not necessarily directly, but it's the same principle of the third tithe, is that Sabbathing land yielded actually an increased amount of food, which would help not only take care of you, but help take care of the poor. And then doing this reset every 7 years for the land and every 50 years for the nation basically would help minimize, you know, a lopsidedness of wealth. Again, we think in terms of capitalism in the United States of America today, and we think, you know, work, 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 make money, buy stuff. God was giving this land to form a nation, right? To form a great people, to form a kingdom. You know, he wanted people to work hard and do their share, but he really didn't set it up in order for one section or group of people to get rich while another people got poor. He wanted them to be, you know, united as a whole and be a cohesive unit. So I think when we begin to see and understand that about the laws, why these laws existed, we can kind of begin to formulate a little bit better of understanding on that main question, the main question that was asked in this regards, and which was, you know, does this apply to having a garden? If we go back to Exodus 23 for a minute, we see this reinforced as one of the reasons. It says, in the seventh year shall let it lie fallow, that the poor of your people may eat, and what they leave the beasts of the field may eat. In like manner you shall do with your vineyard and your olive grove. So again, I think this points more to the fact that God would really bless the crops in, you know, year maybe five and year six to give a triple abundance to supply enough for everybody, including the poor, and including even, you know, the animals, wild beasts of the field like that. But what else do we do in order to provide for the poor? Or what else did Israel do in order to provide for the poor? And that, of course, was the third tithe. So there is a connection there, I think, in terms of why it was done. But third tithe would have been really on a different cycle. You know, the reasons behind the third tithe and the land Sabbath are the same. That is to help take care of the poor. But they're kind of two different mechanisms to do that. The land Sabbath says, okay, you do this, you'll get extra crops, and you'll be able to feed the poor. Third tithe said, you know, you're going to keep an extra tithe every 3 years in a seventh year cycle and use that to help take care of the poor, you know, through that whole time. Because if you think about it, if you just did the land Sabbath and you had an extra bountiful crop, and that might carry you through year seven and eight, but that's probably not going to get you through your next seven-year cycle into year two and three and four and five. You know, that grain and stuff is going to start to rot and go bad or be used up. So you're going to need to keep adding to that, you know, those food stores to help take care of the needy. So while it's related, it actually would have not been on the same cycle. In fact, it wouldn't have ever fallen on the same cycle. Again, you know, the land Sabbath is on a seven-year cycle, but so is tithe. So this kind of gets to Elsa's question about, was everybody on the same cycle? I think, again, we can probably assume they were coming off Sinai. So every 7 years they had a land Sabbath, but every 3 years they had a third tithe. So year one, you know, normal. Year two, normal. Year three, there's a third tithe. Year four, normal. Year five, normal. Year six, normal, but you have an increased amount of, you know, harvest, and it's also a third tithe year. Year seven, you have a land Sabbath, and then you start over in year one. So a third tithe year and a land Sabbath would not have necessarily fallen on the same year. Matter of fact, if everybody was on the same cycle, it couldn't have fallen on the same year. So then that kind of gets us to our next question. Well, maybe let me pause right there. Does that make sense? Or is that too much math for a Wednesday night? Renee says maybe too much math for a Wednesday night. Close. She's sticking in. So if we practice a land Sabbath, when, you know, do we start it? Well, you know, this is where we start to get into more of the answers of do we keep the land Sabbath? Why did God have laws of the land Sabbath and of the third tithe? He did take care of the poor, right? That's because Israel was a civil nation and they had their own set of civil laws. We don't live in a nation that is governed directly and led directly by God like ancient Israel did. We have our own civil laws. When we talked about third tithe, we've talked about third tithe before, we've talked about how what is it for is to provide for the poor. If you do the math and you look at the amount of your taxes that your government, the civil nation that we're under today, takes to pay for the poor, there's a good chance you are already contributing to that as much, if not more, than what third tithe does. And so we tell people, you know, that's kind of a conscientious decision you have to make. God wants us to take care of the poor. The third tithe is still a principle that's in effect. Taking care of the poor is a principle in effect. But the question is, are you already doing it? Most of us aren't farmers. A lot of us aren't even gardeners. So the land Sabbath wouldn't apply. If you don't have a garden, are you no longer responsible to help take care of the poor of the country? Well, no, the principle is still there. You know, we're still supposed to help take care of people. And primarily, again, in this country today, we do that through our taxes, and it goes through different social programs, whether they're state, you know, local, federal, things like that. We may contribute additionally to local funds, you know, food banks, things like that. So that starts to get into some of our answer on, you know, are we quote unquote required to keep a land Sabbath? But before we get to that, let's just quickly answer this question about what cycle would we be on. Typically, we tell people that if you're going to practice third tithe, that whole cycle starts from when you were baptized. And since we were all baptized, well, maybe we weren't all baptized in different years, but not everybody was baptized the same year. Not everybody's on the same seven-year cycle. So a third-year tithe for me might be different than what it is for Steve, and that's different than what it is for, you know, Charlie and Renee and everybody else. So we say go from your own personal starting point, which is when you were baptized. And then you get into questions like, well, okay, I got baptized in June. The secular year starts in January 1st, but God's new year starts in the spring. Where do I start from? And my answer to that is you make that decision, and you go from that. If I got baptized on June 1st, do I wait till, you know, the Jewish New Year, so to speak, in March and start from them, or do I count those 9 months as first year, or what I do? You know, pray about it, ask God for guidance, make a plan, and roll with it. That's what I would tell people. So now to the question about land Sabbath. So let's say, for example, you got baptized in the year 2000. All right, and so 2000, 2001, that's the first year in your seven-year cycle. Second year is 01 to 02. 02 to 03 is that third year, and that's the year you're going to practice the third tithe. All right? But what happens if you got baptized in 2000, but you didn't buy a house in 2002? Well, when do I start my land Sabbath? Do I throw it in with my third tithe year? You know, again, I would say that's a decision that you probably need to make, but it would be hard to say, you know, you should start your land Sabbath cycle if you don't own any land. You know, if in the year 2000 and 2001 you're in an apartment, you don't have any land, you're not growing a garden, then you can't possibly start a land Sabbath if you don't have any land Sabbath. So when it gets into things like that, you can't possibly start a land Sabbath if you don't have land. So when it gets into things like that, you know, at some point in time, you're going to have to kind of make a personal decision. If you find yourself in that situation and you want to talk about it and reason through it, I would be glad to talk to anybody one-on-one, you know, privately to kind of go through that. But ultimately, you're going to kind of need to make a decision to go forward. So all this is kind of bringing us back to the main question, which was, do we need to practice a land Sabbath? Well, you know, as we said, what's the principle behind the land Sabbath? Certainly, we want to take care of the land. That's certainly a principle. We want to provide for the poor. That's the main thing that's repeated in Scripture, is to take care of the needy. And just as we do through our, you know, our third tithe, if we find that our taxes are taking care of that, then, you know, would you strictly need to practice a land Sabbath? You know, probably not. The other thing to consider is that what if you own land but you decide not to garden? Are you ignoring God's command to take care of the poor because you're too lazy, you know, quote unquote, too lazy to grow a garden? You know, maybe you're not a good gardener, maybe you're not good at it. So, you know, it's one of those things that you have to consider what it was. It was a provision under the Old Covenant for a civil nation to provide for the poor and the needy. We are not under the Old Covenant. Now, that's not to say, of course, you know, every time I talk about Old Covenant, New Covenant, I kind of feel like a broken record because I have to put this out there and say that just because we're saying we're not under the Old Covenant does not mean we're saying that everything under the Old Covenant is done away with. You know, there's God's eternal law. There's, you know, the Sabbath was created before there was a nation of Israel. Clean and unclean we see when Noah was putting animals on the ark long before there was an Old Covenant. So there are some things that are eternal law, but we don't see a land Sabbath instituted until, you know, Israel is formed as a nation. Let's continue to read in Exodus 23, verse 12. And let's see something else that I think is very interesting. So Exodus 23, in the King James and New King James Version, it's just like your Bible's like mine. It kind of breaks things up into chunks and it has headings under each paragraph, which those headings are not the Word of God. That's just a man's interpretation, so we don't go by them strictly. But in my Bible, for example, in Exodus 23, verses 10 through 13, it just calls it the laws of the Sabbath. And notice what it's kind of grouped in here in verse 12 of Exodus 23. So in Exodus 10, we talked about 10 and 11, we talked about the land Sabbath. But in Exodus 12, it says, 6 days you shall do your work, and on the seventh day you shall rest, that your ox and your donkey may rest, and the son of your female servant and the stranger may rest, may be refreshed. Well, here we are talking about the land Sabbath, and all of a sudden this is thrown in there about the weekly Sabbath. Does that seem maybe a little bit odd? you know, just kind of a little random reminder in here, oh, by the way, keep the weekly Sabbath. I guess we could say that seems a little bit odd, I think as Bible students we say, you know, God threw that in there. He probably threw it in there for a reason. And so I think we see a connection to the land Sabbath that we see then to the weekly Sabbath. I think there's a parallel there. You know, we work 6 days a week in order to not have to work on the seventh day of the week. You know, on the sixth day, we do a little extra preparation, right? Kind of like in the sixth year, God says, hey, I'll bless it. I'll make it carry you through. You know, on the sixth day, we you know, do as much as we can to, say, prepare meals ahead of time, lay out our clothes for Sabbath services, get stuff loaded in the car if we have to get stuff loaded in the car if we can, you know, things like that to lighten the load on the Sabbath. But do we still wind up having to do some work on the Sabbath? Yeah, we wind up needing to do something. There's still, you know, an amount of meal preparation that needs to be done. Chairs need to be set up. Poor Mr. Chalfont and Steve and Sammy down there setting up the sound in Columbia every, you know, week. It's a lot of work, all right? The point is that, yes, we honor the Sabbath, but there's still a certain amount of physical work that needs to be done. You and I, none of us that I know of, are farmers for a living, okay? We are gardeners as a hobby for fun. Having a piece of land that produces food for us is, on some levels, entertainment. It's slower than, say, watching a NASCAR race or a football game, but, you know, it's entertainment. It's not really the means of our income. If you need food from your garden to eat, if you're counting on that food to survive, then I would certainly not have a problem growing a garden in the seventh year if you are relying on that, because you need to do something. You know, if you're relying on that food to eat, then you're relying on that food. If you are a farmer, this would be a particular challenge, because most farmers live, you know, hand to mouth. If you know anything about farming on a large scale basis, you know, they oftentimes borrow money to buy seed and everything they need to plant the ground, and then at harvest time they go and pay that off and it gets them enough to get through winter. You know, they wind up being behind or not ahead, and they can't really afford to take off a whole year. They can't afford to skip farming for a year. Now, maybe they can do like, you know, some did and say, well, okay, I won't plant this field. At least I'll give that land a rest. But let's extrapolate this out a little bit to the Jubilee year. Okay, the Jubilee year is connected to this. Jubilee year, you forgave everybody their debts for that year. You offered them a chance to buy back your land. You know, the mortgage company... The credit card company, you know, the grocery store, if you're not a farmer and you're buying stuff, they're not going to just say, oh, well, you don't have to pay your bill this year. And it kind of speaks back to that point that these were civil laws for a civil nation, which we are not. We are not a civil nation under godly rule. We are a civil nation under man's rule. So boiling all this down, do we need to keep the land Sabbath? while I have no doubt whatsoever that God would bless you for keeping the land Sabbath, and I think that it's a fantastic idea if you have a garden to give it a rest every 7 years, we as a church do not make a doctrinal distinction on this. We do not say thou shalt or thou shalt not, primarily because it is a matter that seems to apply as a civil law to a civil nation, which we are not at this point under God's law. Now, will it be reinstituted in the millennium? Perhaps. I'd say likely, in fact. If you have a garden and you can give it a rest every 7 years, you know, I think it would be good. I think you should. But I don't think that this is necessarily part of the new covenant or a salvational sort of an issue. So my official answer is I don't have an answer. 40 is a 40-minute tap dance around the answer. So sorry if that disappointed anybody, but that's kind of where we stand on this. So I don't know if that elicits any thoughts. It was a good question. I really like the question. It made me kind of think about some things and think about principles. But sort of at the end of the day, we as a church, we really don't make a firm quote unquote ruling on this. I'll make sure I'll unmute everybody. I'll unmute everybody at this point. Yeah. Yes, I can. Yeah. I think it can. Yeah, I think it can. I think it's a good idea. And as a gardener, I will tell you about every 7 years, I probably need a break. there's something to be said for that. But, you know, if you're talking about, you know, you're sticking a few tomato plants out on the deck, you know, good chances are you're probably buying potting soil. You know, you're that land, you're not reusing it, quite frankly. You're probably, you know, replenishing it or replacing it. And so by the technical letter of the law, you know, you're not going out and into a vast field and tilling up that whole field and using the nutrients out of that. You are changing kind of everything about that equation. I think, you know, you could make an argument either way. I think you could, in a clear conscience, continue to, you know, have your little tomato plants out there on your back porch or your little box garden if you wanted to, because it's not, you know, it's not your income. You're probably not using it to take care of the poor. You're using it just as a, you know, because you want a fresh tomato on your salad or whatever. But, you know, I do feel that if you chose to take a land Sabbath, particularly, you know, if you had a bigger garden and you had to, like, a plot of land out in your backyard you're doing, if you chose to do that every 7 years, you know, I think God would bless you for it. I haven't lived in a place long enough to have a land Sabbath yet, so I'm only about 2 years in here. Well, you know, from a pragmatic and practical standpoint, and this is, you gotta be careful here because you could probably justify breaking God's laws if you wanted to this way. From a practical standpoint, farming on the land is not necessarily as hard as it used to be because you're not taking the nutrients out because they put them back in through fertilizers. Of course, the flip side is, you know, the chemicals and stuff you put in your ground probably aren't any good for you or anything else. So that's a whole other separate different debate. On my mom has a farm land that they sublet and they rent that out. And what they do there is for the nutrients. Corn takes a lot of nitrogen out of the ground, so they plant corn 1 year and then they do 2 years of soybeans. So they kind of have a cycle in that regard. Yeah, for sure. So if you go to Leviticus 23, I guess maybe I spent a little bit too much time, or Leviticus 25. I probably spent a little bit too much time trying to differentiate between verse 5 and verse 6 and not enough time talking about what verse 6 actually does say. Most commentaries will say that basically that this is referring to the volunteers that come, or gleanings that come up. I said the interpretation that I sort of lean on in verse 6 is that this isn't necessarily talking about volunteers, or it's not talking about strictly just the volunteers that would come up. It's talking about the increased produce that God would provide in the years before. And we get that understanding from the clarification that's added there in verse 20 through 22. The gleanings, would still be available for the poor. I didn't get a chance to listen to them, but I did some research on our website this week, and we really don't have any official sort of a doctrinal statement on Land Sabbaths, but I did see about four or five different sermons that people had done on Land Sabbaths over the years. So I was going to try to check those out when I got some time. I think Randy Stiver did one. I think who else did one? Johnny Lambert did one. So there are a couple different sermons out there on it. So, but I didn't have time to listen to all of them before putting together the Bible study. Well, I mean, I think it reinforces Sabbath keeping, certainly. I think it reinforces Sabbath keeping, the idea of resting the land. You know, you got a little more skin in the game when you're putting your life in your hands. You know, to take one day off a week is not so, you know, you're not going to starve to death in one day. But if you do, you know, your whole land, you're putting your trust completely in God. And I think that kind of gets back into that differentiation in verse 5 and verse 6, Leviticus 25. You know, I think one interpretation of that, and by the way, Heidi, I see you have your hand up, so I'll call on you here in just a second. I think one interpretation of that is, you know, God puts that differentiation in there in verse 5, saying what grows of your own harvest, don't gather that, to kind of say, hey, don't try to cheat, don't try to skirt around the rules. What he's saying is, trust me. You know, rely on me. And if you read verse 20, you know, what does he say? He says, what shall we eat in the seventh year, since we shall not sow nor gather produce? Then I will command my blessing on you in the sixth year, and I will bring forth produce enough for 3 years. God's saying, you know, trust me. He say, you know, that's a me problem. That's not a you problem, Israel. You know, I'll give you what you need. So I do think, it points to increased trust, certainly, in God. All right, Heidi, you can unmute yourself and ask your question. You got a question? You're breaking up just a little bit. Can you say that one more time? Well, yeah, so there would still, so this kind of goes back to Leviticus 25 and verse 6. And this is where, you know, there's a little bit, it's subject somewhat to interpretation on exactly what verse 6 means. It says, and the Sabbath produce of the land shall be food for you. You know, is that kind of referring to all the excess produce that God would provide in year 6? Or is that referring to, you know, the volunteers or the things that would come up that people could glean? Or quite possibly, quite likely, a little bit of both. So, yeah, they would still be able to glean during that time if there was anything out there, because the whole intent behind the land Sabbath, because it's what it says, is that you're doing it to help provide for the poor. I don't know if that answers your question or not, but the best answer I have. Sure could, yeah. Yeah, you sure could. You could, or, you know, you could, maybe a more practical way to do that would be, you know, if you didn't want people necessarily tramping across your property, you know, because in the litigious society that we live in, I could see somebody going out there and breaking their ankle in your field and suing you for everything you own. Just go out there and pick it and put it at the end of your yard and say, you know, free. Something like that. The other interesting thing to be said about this, and I kind of saved this for the last thing to talk about because this is really dangerous ground, is that there's really no evidence that Israel actually ever practiced a land Sabbath or a Jubilee year. If you look through Scripture, you really don't find anything where it points distinctly to that. I mean, Jesus Christ talked about being, you know, basically being the Jubilee year. And that's the other thing that if you ask probably any Protestant sort of a preacher today, they'd say, well, you know, Jesus Christ is the Jubilee. He is the year release. And, of course, the problem with that is they use that as a carte blanche statement to say you don't have to obey anything out of the Old Testament, you know. But there's really not any evidence. In Nehemiah 13, we do see where let's see if I can find it here. Bear with me just a minute. Nehemiah does try to institute some Sabbath reform. But again, we don't necessarily see evidence that anyone actually ever followed along. Let's see. I think it starts. Yeah, so he starts doing the reforms in chapter 3, Nehemiah 13. And verse 10, it says, I also realized that the portions for the Levites had not been given them, for each of the Levites and the singers who did the work had gone back to his field. So I contended with the rulers and said, why is the house of God forsaken? And I gathered them together and set them in their place. Then all Judah brought the tithe of the grain and the new wine and the oil to the storehouse. So this would include probably third tithe, you know, types of tithing as well as, you know, possibly gleanings from the land Sabbath, although more likely the third tithe sort of a thing. It says, I have appointed treasurers of the storehouses. You know, it talks about the different people that actually did that. Verse 15, he says, in those days I saw people in Judah treading wine presses on the Sabbath and bringing in sheaves and loading donkeys, which they brought to Jerusalem on the Sabbath day, and I warned them about the day on which they were selling provisions. That seems to apply more like to the weekly Sabbath, but it's, you know, I guess it's possible that it's referring to the land Sabbath as well. I mean, honestly, if they were forgetting and not keeping the weekly Sabbath, they probably weren't keeping the land Sabbath either. Yeah, so there's not a whole lot of evidence that Israel was ever any good at actually keeping any of the land Sabbaths. I mean, we know they weren't good at keeping the regular Sabbath or any of the Ten Commandments, so why would we think they would do any good at keeping the land Sabbaths? I listened to a series, an audio book, and it was about the series of sevens. I think I mentioned it. I forget the gentleman's name, but it's called The Bible Project, and it's a podcast. And they did a 10-part series on the Sabbath, and they went into a lot of details. It was really good until about the last 10 minutes of the last episode where they said, well, Jesus is the Sabbath, you don't have to do anything. And Paul did away with all the laws. But the first, you know, 9 or 10 hours of the webcast or the podcast were really good. And they kind of said the same thing, that, you know, talked about how basically the reason that we had that God had a land Sabbath was so that, you know, you give the land a rest and the land will work for you rather than you haven't, you know, rather than the land working you, you know, working you to death to produce anything out of it. You give it a rest, it'll rejuvenate, it'll replenish. Most major, you know, agricultural sort of universities have done studies to tell you things like, hey, if you give the land a rest, you know, it yields a better crop, you know, in the following years. But, you know, listening to that podcast, they said the same thing. There's really no historical or biblical evidence that Israel ever actually bothered to keep a land Sabbath. Again, I hesitate to mention that because, you know, we don't use that as a justification to say, well, they didn't, we don't have to either. But right. Right. And I think too, there's a lot to be said. Consider if you could take a year off from work, which by the way, some people do that. What do they call it? A sabbatical. Yeah. If you could take a year off work, if Israel could take a year off of having to plant and harvest, what would that allow you to do in terms of devoting time to developing your relationship with God? You have a little extra time, do that, wouldn't you? I think so. So, yeah, there's many good principles about it, and like I said, I firmly believe it's one of those things that we'll probably see reinstituted in the millennium and in the kingdom. But yeah, it's one of those things we've kind of lost sight of, and I don't think it would do you any harm to obey it. Let me put it that way. Without saying thou shalt, I think it would probably be a good idea. But it's officially it's not anything we really make a doctrinal statement on.